Who will speak to you on some of her earlier experiences in Waseca.
Oh, what do you want me to say now?
You give us your name and when you were married, your maiden name.
Oh, I see.
Yes, just kind of your...
Well, my husband and I were married in Cloquet, Minnesota, in February 22nd, 1911. And we met in Seattle, Washington. I had been doing office work in Spokane, and I was tired of that, and I had moved to Seattle where I had relatives, and I was going to attend the university there to brush up on my French. And I planned on going back to teaching French. And then I met my husband, and he said when the first time he saw me, there was a woman I'm going to marry, just like that.
Without asking.
And now, he didn't tell me, but we found out later on about it. And then we had such a lovely summer all the time through there and everything of that sort. And then he was transferred by the Penton Publishing Company to Cincinnati, Ohio. And then we moved there. And then they found that they told him, the doctors told him, that he would lose his eyesight if he didn't get away from the work. He said, even if he got out and dug ditches. Well, he'd been raised on a farm, born and raised on a farm here in Waseca, or near Waseca, and the old farm is still there. And so we came here and then made arrangements to take over this place. But
what was your maiden name?
My maiden name was Fleur Santerre.
And you parlez français?
Oh, oui. Mm. Oui, monsieur.
Comment parlez-vous?
Très bien, monsieur.
You can't be a girl, huh?
And, I realized that I knew absolutely nothing about the farm. And we always had a nice garden at home, but I was always busy with schoolwork. And I had, after I finished high school, I taught country school for a couple of years. And then something came up so that I didn't want to go on with that anymore. So I went to the New Era Business College in Superior, Wisconsin, and they asked me to take over the class there in both spelling and arithmetic, and so that to pay for my tuition. And a half sister came from Spokane, Washington, and she wanted me to go out there because the salaries were so much better, so that's the way I happened to get out west. Mm. And then after I tired of doing office work, as I said, and I went to Seattle to brush up on my French and go back to teaching because I love teaching. And then, as I said, my husband was ordered back here, and then we were married and came to the farm. But I realized that I didn't know a thing about the farm, about anything at all. And should I digress and tell you why I was afraid of a chicken?
But being a good student, you learned, didn't you?
My grandfather had come and get me, possibly to get me out of my mother's hair, because I had three brothers after me, and at my grandfather's in Osseo, Edouard Sanson, his name was, and my grandmother asked me to go out and get some eggs. She was going to make some cake, and I went out there and I tried to take the eggs away from a broody hen, and she landed on my head. My grandfather ran to my rescue. So I'll tell you, I had a lot of respect for chickens.
Yeah.
But I took over the chickens that were here, and with the government bulletins I learned how to cull them. And then we went into that depression, and first one depression and then the other. And I felt that the part of the time the chickens were the only things that were paying. The other livestock was just in the red, and the farm, the first year or two, produced almost nothing at all. And then with our government bulletins, my husband built up the soil here until the people from the university, the farm department, came over to look through our records and examine our crops and all of that, because they couldn't believe how heavy our crops were. They were way out beyond what most of the people around here were getting. And
Mr. Zimmerman was a good student too then. He practiced what he read.
Yes. Well, we went down and we built up this place, and then I took more interest in the chickens, I had that lower part of that chicken coop built there. Now, I paid for that, and then later on we built some more. And then later on, well, we fixed a place over here, over a hog house back over here. But now, I don't know whether you'd want something kind of humorous in there, but
I love it.
But my husband wanted to show me the place up there where he thought that we could have chickens, you know, on the upstairs there. But the only way you could get up there was to climb up a ladder, and then there was sort of a platform that was the ceiling or the inside of this building of a place under a machine shed. Mm-hmm. And that was all fine, and we had talked the plans and everything like that. Then came the time to go down. And, you know, I couldn't go down that ladder. I had, back while I was in Spokane, I'd been in one of the most awful train wrecks in the history there. And as a train came out of a tunnel, or was in the tunnel, it started in speeding up and going so fast that we knew that there must be something wrong. We feel that the engineer dropped dead or something like that. And when we came out, our train plunged into one of those deep mountain lakes. Mm-hmm. And some of the bodies, they didn't get out there for about 4 or 5 months. Mm-hmm. And I myself was pulled right from the very edge of the lake and through a window of the mm-hmm. of the car. And I had got so kind of sunburned, I didn't dare be in the parlor car or anything like that. I was in the day coach. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a long time afterwards that they came and rescued us. And the dead were all lined up on each side of the track there. And as I said, those in the first part of the train the bodies weren't rescued for a long, long time. And I kind of look down at something like that, and make sort of a sick feeling go all through me. So my husband said, "Well, what in the world are we going to do?" I said, "Go down and turn off the lights so I can't see anything, and you go down." And he says, "I'll watch to see the catch." So then I backed up to that ladder, and I went down the ladder backwards, just hanging on to the rungs. And I got down there safely, but I'll tell you, I never climbed a ladder like that again.
You, we're not supposed to ask a lady her age, but so I'll just ask you what year you were born. That way you won't have to.
Oh, that would be a nice, gentle way to do it. Well, I'll tell you a bit of history there, too. I was born at 4 o'clock. On Sunday afternoon, when the Vesper bells are ringing, and if you've ever heard Vesper bells, you know what those are.
Mm-hmm.
And the year 1882, and
where?
In Dayton, Minnesota.
Dayton, Minnesota.
This little town right up here.
Sure.
And while we were standing there, they were rejoicing over the fine baby that had put in an appearance under such beautiful, ideal conditions. My father gave a start, and he says, "My God," he says, "my mother's dead." And his mother was at Big Canada, way up the St. Lawrence River. And several days afterwards, he got the word that she had passed away at that particular time. That's something that's beyond understanding.
Now, your maiden name was?
Mary Flore Santerre.
Santerre.
Yeah. S-A-N-T-E-R-R-E.
Sure. Now, Dayton, Minnesota, that's close to the Norfolk.
Yes.
Up in there, yes, I spent quite a little time up there.
Yeah.
Well, now, you were married in 1911?
Yes, on February 22nd.
And you did have children, I presume.
Oh, yes, we had four.
You want to tell us who
they are? What is that?
You want to tell us who they are?
Well, my oldest one is Sister Flora, who's at Rochester. And my other daughter is Mrs. Gordon Bethke. And they're on vacation now. We're expecting them back tomorrow. And then my son David, Jr., and my son Louis Peter, mm-hmm. after his dad.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And his daughter-in-law.
Yeah, I know that.
Yes, well, David, my daughter Esther is married to Gordon Bethke, I think I told you that. And David and Margaret here, Margaret Bishman.
Yes, ma'am.
Father Trainer picked me out of the whole group after Mass. Father Trainer picked me out of the whole group. We went over to this old schoolhouse.
Yeah.
And when he came over, he asked me what I thought of the school. And I was so struck with that. You see, there have been those forest fires, those terrible forest fires. Moose Lake, where I had taught school, that had all burned. And then the Hinckley fire. And later on, of course, it was later on that we had that cloquet burned. I said, well, Father, I said, this is a regular fire trap, isn't it? Here they are, the walls, diplomatic, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's that narrow stairway going up one wall, great long windows and great long dirty lace curtains hanging from those windows. Well, those children would have been trapped in the, if a fire had started, those children would have been trapped in there. That was the only way for them to get down. And he looked at me and gave me a deep look as if he was thanking me for something. And I think that I furnished him with one more excuse for getting a new building. And from that time on, he and I were the best of friends.
Mm-hmm. Father Trainer married my parents.
Oh, is that so?
Yes, I remember what he said.
Yeah.
You have one daughter that's a nun.
Yes.
You now are living where?
Well, with my daughter and my son-in-law in Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis.
Yes.
Do you get down here to see your old friends quite often?
Well, for a while there, my reason for leaving, moving from Waseca, was because, I have an inoperable condition, and the riding on the highways, the roads here, absolutely every time, it was quite painful for me, and so I moved up there, and I thought you see, my mother's people live in and around in Osseo and Minneapolis and all of that. There are four or five branches of the family up there. So I was in with, 1882, just before I had this trouble, we had a family reunion. And Sister Agnesine is a cousin, and she had us out at the convent there, and I think there must have been at least 35 of us there in our family connected there, and I'll tell you, there's some gabbing going on there.
Wonderful. You are 92 years of age then.
Yes, the 6th of August.
Well, I certainly want to thank Alan Wolfe for bringing you to our attention, because
yes.
I would have missed you, and we're going to record some of
well,
the fine old
Well, if it will help you with anything, I'm thankful for that, and thankful that Alan could come out here.
Why don't you tell us some more things about, have you got some more room on there, Joe? Why don't you tell us some more things about as you progressed in the chicken business, and then Louie finally went into the REA, and it would be kind of interesting to have all of that.
With the LP going into the REA, you see, he was an electrical engineer, and it was kind of hard for him to get back to farming, you know, after being in the type of work that he'd been. And when this talk of the REA came up, people got after him and wanted him to go around the state here and talk people, the farmers, into going using electricity. Now, we had electricity on this farm. Howard Dakin had put in our electricity here, and we'd had
a light plant before that.
Yes. He furnished the electricity. He had the lines by here.
Before that, you had a light plant, I think, for many years before that, didn't you?
We didn't have a light plant.
I thought you did.
No. Not that I remember. No, it was Howard Dakin who furnished the electricity.
Later on, yeah.
Uh-huh. And he says, well, what in the world am I going to do? Well, we had a big old vocation all along there. And I said, here are your old school books. Now, get busy. And I hauled him out, and he went over and reviewed the books that he'd had. And he went out and traveled all over the state here, way up the north, the northern part of the farthest north in the state, way down south and everywhere like that, and talked to REA business. And then one day when he came home, he found, I think, four or five men sitting here waiting for him. And they wanted him to take over the REA in still Waseca County. And so he kind of hesitated about that, but then he was very happy that he went into it. So that is the history of it. And I hear from Regina Krause, that is Kennedy now, and Margaret Frost. Now, they send me the loveliest letters, absolutely, two or three times a year, you know, and they've come to see me in Minneapolis and everything,
wonderful.
And tell me the loveliest things about the office there and everything, some of the meetings that we had.
Tell about that little story you were telling us about when you used to have your picnics out here in the back here.
Well, we just had so many of those. We'd have the different groups. I belonged to a woman's card club from the church. And then we belonged to the farmers' club. And then there the REA people came. And this one time that they came, I had expected possibly 35 or something like that. Lewis had told me that there'd be about 35 or something like that. And when they stopped coming, we had over 50, about 53 or 55. But we managed. I had a whole one of these electric cookers, you know. I had that heaped full of chicken, fried chicken. And we had that great big blue kettle on the, I think you ate some of those here.
Nice boy.
And on our cooker, our a brick cooker that in the backyard. And we had a lot of other things already, and so nobody went hungry.
Oh, I bet not.
Being of French descent, I'm sure you were a good cook.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that that I had very much in my mind. I've been after my family to go up. I wish that I could have done that. And the Larpenters went up. John and Mame Larpenter, their Mame was my cousin. And they went up there, and they said that absolutely everywhere they went, it was like seeing the stations of the rosary of the saints. It was Saint this and Saint that and so on. And of course they looked up the Samsons and the Ghost Lands, and our great uncle my grandmother Samson's brother was a member of parliament up there. And on my father's side, my grandmother's a Willette. And I called somebody Well, after in Waseca, I got her in Minneapolis, and I asked him about it, and he says that the Willettes were the first people who founded Windsor, Canada. And he said that now, he says, about a third of the population of Windsor are Willettes.
There are Willettes in just over...
Winnebago.
Willette.
Well, do they call, spell their name O-U? E-L-A-D-D-D. Some of them have changed it to W-I-L-L.
Did you mention a ghostly?
Ghostly.
How would you spell that?
G-O-S-S-E-L-I-N. That is my grandmother's name.
Well, did L.P. build this house?
Oh, no, the house is this part of the house was here. But no, we built this on as sort of a porch.
I see.
And that is where I had all my plants, you know.
Was the farm, was it used as a farm when you come on?
Yes, it was used as a farm, but it had been neglected terribly. The crops were down.
Must have been.
And then, of course, we bought the 80 across there. That belonged to Frank Schutz over there. And then later on, David bought some more land down over here. But we bought this 80 here, and the 60 over. Or is it? Is this 120? Well, I can't remember. I think this 120.
60 out here, and then there's another one back there.
Yeah. Uh huh. Well, I think this is an 80 though. It started out to be an 80, and I don't know whether. But that is the record. So this is 80, and then the other north of there is a 60.
Mm-hmm. It'd be kind of nice to have her tell about that she's has Mrs. Zimmerman here now. Why don't you just say something about that you?
Well, we've had quite an eventful 2 weeks with Grandma here with us. We had hoped to have more people come to see her, but the weather hadn't been cooperating very well until today. So,
you want to tell her last
Sunday we had Father Rivers come out and say Mass here at the house, and Sister Paul was here, and our daughter Anita and Alice and her husband and the kiddies.
So your sister is Sister Flora at the up on the hill?
No, she's at Lloyd's Convent. She's teaching
she's at Lord's.
Yeah, she teaches at Ed Lord's, and that's where the sisters live. The school is close by.
Yes.
And then during the summer, she's at Assisi Heights.
I have my sister's husband. My brother-in-law's sister is at Assisi Heights. She celebrated her 50th anniversary as a nun back 10 years ago. She still lives there in retirement.
Oh, I see. Sister Flora goes and helps the old nuns with their clothing and things like that. She does. She loves to sew, and she fixes all their garments and old kind of waits on them and all of that.
That's wonderful of her. That is quite place up there on the hill if you ever it's gorgeous.
Just so the Indians don't take it away.
Zimmerman, I understand this is the first time you've been back to Waseca in 11 years.
About 11, yes. Which is just a question of physical disability, that's sure. All. Let's put it that way.
Well, then you had a lot of catching up to do, didn't you? Visiting with your acquaintances.
They come up there to Minneapolis, of course.
But you had to see the homestead.
Yes.
Has this changed a lot since you left here?
Oh, yes. The house has changed quite a lot.
These modern wives, they have to have all...
Well, not only that, but, you know, the living of the... living conditions keep changing and everything of that sort, and there are improvements that come and all of that. We put in a lot of improvements here, and everybody has a right to make improvements that, as they come along.
Well, you're a fine lady for saying that.
Well. So my grandfather come take me to Osceola, and Aunt Philomena and Uncle Theodore in the Dayton would come and get me and take me to their place. Well, their home was right on the, is it the Crow River or there, and you went down long steps to get to the edge of to the water, and Cousin Aurel used to take me around, and he called me his little sister. And we'd go pick up shells, you know, all the way around. And Aunt Philomena used to take me, and she was a little short, plump person, you know, tiny little feet, and used to call on all of her neighbors, her friends, and show off the little girl that she had. And she taught me to sew. And from that time on, I made my doll clothes and everything of that sort. And then later on we moved, my other two brothers were, my one brother was born, my brother Frank was born in Dayton, and then my other two brothers in Anoka. And before we moved from Anoka to Cloquet, the girl who lived close by came over, and she said her dolls didn't have any clothes. And here I had to give up some of my precious doll clothes to this girl who didn't sew. Oh, I feel terribly abused. Some of those things, yeah. You know, silly things like that, yeah. Come up in your mind.
You don't have the dolls anymore.
No, I haven't had one for quite a while.
No, I mean you didn't keep You didn't keep the early dolls.
Oh, no, no, I don't know what became of them or anything
at
all.
That's usually what
happens. The chances are that maybe my brothers took them out and scalped them or something of that sort. But I was telling the family here that my father bought a piece of land, 5 acres of land, outside of Cloquet, and they'd... we had some neighbors who were inclined to be to quarrel and everything like that, Joseph. And my father loved quiet and peace. He bought this place out there. And what was I going to tell you about that now? Isn't that funny? The thing has slipped my mind. I hope I'm not on record here now.
No, you have a right to. You have a right to lose your train of thought. I lose it, and I'm a few years younger. You.
I have that trouble too.
Well, and anyway, one thing I wanted to tell you about my father, that he had the habit of when we moved to Cloquet. That's what I wanted to tell you. Miss Lena Archibald, one of the grandest women you ever set eyes on, a tall, kind of Scottish type, was my first teacher, and she'd give me some books to take home to read, and my father used to read those to us, and then after he'd read for every evening, and after he'd read to us for half an hour or something like that, we'd discuss it, and he'd ask us, well, oh, what should these people have done? Why did they act the way they did? And what would have been better to do? So I said, we got lessons in psychology when we were in the first grade, you know. I told Father Colbert in Minneapolis that, and he says, you ought to head out and teach some of the teachers how to teach school.
Mr. Father Colbert that used to be at St. Mary's?
Well, I don't know whether he's at Annunciation.
Well, Father Colbert served out at St. Mary's back in the 30s.
Oh, I see.
Maybe this would be a nephew or something.
Well, I wouldn't say for sure. I wouldn't,
How old is, is Father Colbert there now?
Yes.
What would his age be about?
Well, I imagine in the 50s or something like that. He's quite a fresh-looking...
That's the nephew.
Well-preserved...
That's the nephew of the Father Colbert. He used to come down here and visit.
See, where's your mother's name on there? How does she spell her?
F-L-O-R-E.
My ears surely got a shock when I heard that Father Ray Collins had died.
Yeah, and the two of them.
We got word that Father Joe had died.
Yeah.
And now, you know, Father Joe was, when Sister Flora was teaching in Ashland, Kentucky, she got permission to go to the East Coast to visit with my brother, who's there, an Army officer. And she was to go with me. And she got in touch with
I guess one of them had a tremendous library. He was a real student.
That was Father Joe.
Was it Father Joe?
I think
the one that passed away first?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I heard.
Have you ever seen their pictures?
See, they were in the paper at the time.
Yeah, they were in the paper.
Oh, I see. I have them in my prayer book here, I think.
Joe was telling me when we come back home, just to change the subject, that his mother taught out here at this school, this little school out here.
Oh, now, well, the chances are that she taught...
You must have known her then.
She probably did. My mother was Mary Wheelock. She taught when she was 16 years old, right in that school, in that farm, their farm.
Is that where they went?
That was a Wheelock farm.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing but a gravel pit as I remember this.
Then Anna Adams was Dave's first teacher.
Anna Adams.
I could tell by looking in my mother's book
who she had.
She had, what's the gentleman? Jackson? Was it
Andrew
Jackson? She had Andrew Jackson. She had the gloves.
Andrew Jackson lived the road.
Yeah.
Had him
as a student in Gloff. You know, he's an attorney now. He's county attorney in the city. I remember he came to see her one time. Ed Gloff. I don't know where he lived here then, but and then she taught. She taught my dad too, I guess.
You know, a thing that bothers me. These people who are making such a terrible fuss over the fact that the United States helped in Vietnam, South Vietnam, and they don't understand sometimes the thought goes through my mind that it's just abysmal the ignorance that causes some of that. Now, my brother Frank wrote me, he used to write, we used to correspond all the time, before the First World War, and he said that he was in the Pacific someplace on some of the islands, and he said that one of these days, he says, Japan wants to spread, and he says, they're bursting at the seams, and he says, one of these days, they're going to come out. Now, it was these people, the Japs, that they heard talking like that. And I suppose possibly drink some too much beer or something like that. And then he said, and then later on, it's just one thing after the other, you know, that built up. And then the United States was mixed up in Europe in the First World War, and then came the Second World War. And then as the Japan was all ready to pounce. And that's what it was.
You just don't know.
Mm-hmm.